Welcome into the NHL at the Ring podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, we got a good one today. A couple of really good guests for you. Claude Julien, coach of the Montreal Canadiens. Kendall Coyne Schofield, new player development coach for the Chicago Blackhawks, also national team player. These are some good guests. I'm excited for this one.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. I'm already inspired, and I'm ready for the season to start now. We're talking hockey again, and you know, great guests on, and it reminds me of how much this podcast was bringing it every week when the games were going on and everything else. We've been good during the off time, but we were spectacular during the gameplay. Not to toot my own horn or your horn or Bob Bender's horn, but we were spectacular, and I feel like we're getting back into that. We're getting back into hockey shape here.
We're always spectacular. We're always bringing it. Come on now. But we still don't know. Right. I mean, that's the thing. We still don't know. There's still no news on when the start of the season will be. The NHL and the NHL Players Association continue to work on the myriad of details that they have to work on. And Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, spoke about this in an online interview during the Sports Business Journal's Dealmakers and Sports Conference on Wednesday, basically saying, look, they know they're going to try to play an unusual 2020-21 season in order to return to normalcy in the 21-22 season. But it's a matter of getting to the point that they can drop the puck on this season. And that's what they're dealing with now. And it involves, like I said, a myriad of details, from what are the divisions going to look like because of, you know, geographic realignment that might be needed, financial details that, you know, are resulting from the system being stressed, as Gary Bettman has talked about. There's so many things that they have to talk about, but we are getting down to it here, and they're not ruling out January 1st yet, although it's December 3rd as we talk right now, so looking less and less like a possibility, but there's so many details that they're working on.
Yeah, look, it's the border still closed, so that's going to throw everything into chaos between the U.S. and Canada and travel there. So that's the geographic abnormalities that we might have to deal with for 1 year. That would certainly make things interesting. But the biggest thing, and finances are obviously always huge, and the biggest thing is the health and safety of everybody that's involved, right? Like, I don't know when the CBA was negotiated and signed a few months ago, right before the playoffs started, that anybody could picture where we are now in the COVID and in the pandemic. You know, the numbers were down. There seemed to be a light at the end of the tunnel. Everybody said, oh, when the winter comes, it'll be worse. But I don't know that anybody anticipated what we're at now. You look at the other sports and how they're having to deal with it. Finland just put their top league on pause for a couple of weeks. Some college teams have had to put theirs on pause. As we speak right now, BU just put theirs on pause. You've seen what happened in the NFL with the Pittsburgh-Baltimore game that took, it seemed like, 3 weeks to play. Nobody lives in a bubble, to excuse the pun, and they see what's going on as other teams, other sports try and, you know, navigate this. So there's a lot of health and safety issues that need to be dealt with, and I think that's the most difficult thing. And, you know, there's vaccines coming, right? And that's going to change the whole equation if they can get out fast enough. So as you watch the news, there's a lot of good news, and then there's some bad news. And I only have to plan my own life, and it's difficult. I can't imagine, you know, being in the PA or being in the league and trying to plan everybody's life for the next couple of months. It's a Herculean task.
Yeah, no, I mean, the health and safety, there's no question. There are vaccines coming, like you said. And that's probably why Gary Bettman talked about how a return to normalcy in the 21-22 season, but you got to return on time too. And that's also part of this. It's a huge factor in this. You can't do what we did this past summer because that's not going to allow you to return on time. But the financial aspect of this is big. And I think, you know, Gary Bettman was strong yesterday when he was talking about this, that they're not asking anybody to renegotiate or the memorandum of understanding or the CBA. It's a matter of the system, that the economic system that the league works with is going to be stressed because of escrow and all those things. And they're trying to figure out ways to do it. And to me, it's you're running on parallel paths here with the health and safety and the finances, and everybody says, well, why don't they have it? And there's a lot to do. There's a lot to work through here, and time is becoming of the essence now. But I am still hopeful, Sean. I'm very hopeful that will get a meaningful season with meaningful playoffs. It's just a matter of getting to the end game here so we can drop the puck.
Yeah, and look, everybody has such a short-term memory. Let's just go back to right before the bubble started. Well, we got to get this done. We got to name cities we're going to do it in. You know, just say Vegas and Vancouver and call it a day.
Like, let's go. We're going.
Plan. And we'll be good to go. And the league kept saying, well, let's wait. Let's see what happens. We're going to keep all our options open. And then all of a sudden, Vegas and Vancouver fell off cliffs for various reasons, whether it was the medical people, whether it was the caseloads rising and whatever. And all of a sudden, Toronto and Edmonton are the cities. And it proved to be a perfect situation. Right, they played the whole bubble without any positives. They got everything done. It's pretty much the shining light if you're going to do a bubble system, and how to do it. And the reason that they were able to do that is because they kept all their options open till the last minute. Look, it's frustrating. Nobody wants to sit and say, "I don't know what's going to happen in 2 weeks," but that's the world we're in. You don't know. You can make plans. Go ahead, make plans for vacation tomorrow, Dan. For a month from now, see what happens, right? You wait as long as you possibly can. Oh, I see a window. I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. That's what our lives have become, and that's what sports have become. And you can't control a pandemic. You can only live within it. So
live through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we plug along at NHL.com, Sean, and our 31 and 31 series has been going on. Today, you can go on NHL.com and catch the New Jersey Devils. Tomorrow, it's the New York Islanders. Saturday's the New York Rangers. All the teams are up there. We recently had the Montreal Canadiens, and obviously we'll have Claude Julien on the show here in a bit. But Sean, before we get to that, let's get to a team that we haven't had yet in the 31 and 31 series because it runs alphabetically, the Toronto Maple Leafs. And real quick with you, recently, Kyle Dubas, according to Sportsnet, speaking at the Maple Leaf coaches open house, said the Leafs core must sacrifice more in order to get to the next level. I think we've been talking about that for a long time, but I thought it was very interesting to hear the general manager of the team talk about it and talk about how battles, 50-50 pucks, the willingness to get in there. To me, it's message sending to his core as they prepare to come back eventually to Toronto to play a season.
Yeah. I think you do. And I think some of the roster building has been message sending. Like that's what Joe Thornton's going to do, right? That's where he is in his career. That's what Spezza did last year. Like you look at bringing in some of these guys and you're like, why would they do that? They have all this talent, like, and this high paid talent, just, you know, bring in AHL guys, bring in, you know, lower paid guys and, you know, younger guys and give them an opportunity, but they can't because they feel like they need those players that are going to A, set an example, and B, are going to be counted on in those situations when you do need that, you know, like Jason Spezza was last year, where, you know, you need to do certain defensive things or you need to do something, you need to set an example. And those were the guys that kind of did it. And that's why, you know, I thought Jason was so successful. And one of the reasons why I think Joe will probably be successful is because I still think some of that young core needs some guidance and some leadership. And am I shocked that it took this long? Maybe. But you're in it now. You can't be like, oh, well, we're gonna wait for it to happen. Yeah. And there's too much invested. There's too much time. There's too much money. There's too much expectations. You need to do everything you can to accelerate that. And to me, that was the biggest thing that he said was, we can't wait anymore. There's no more waiting. You go out and you get it. Like, that's where they're at. They've had their teeth kicked in a couple of years now where, hey, we're good enough. And then they play in the playoffs and they're not good enough, you know, and it's always wait till next year. We'll be a little bit older. We'll be a little bit more mature. You know, everything will be come together. Well, you wait enough next year's and your window's closed.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think that's where Toronto's getting now, right, is there's no more waiting for next year. If we start waiting, all of a sudden Auston Matthews is, you know, getting older and hockey years getting older, not really getting older like you or I, but in hockey years getting older and you're like, oh my God, wait, what's happening? You know, look at Chicago, right? Those guys aren't old, Kane and Taze, but they're hockey old. They got a lot of miles on their body and that window's closing. Like if you wait too long in Toronto, that's where you're at and you don't have the three rings to say, well, it's okay.
Now, I've long been of the belief that once the Maple Leafs figure it out, and I think figure it out, meaning what Dubas was talking about, they'll go on that run. And that's why it caught my eye. It just, I thought it was fascinating to hear from the general manager of the team. Anyway, let's get to that interview we talked about with Claude Julien, because we were able to catch up with the coach of the Montreal Canadiens. He's feeling good, as he tells us, and there's a lot to be excited about in Montreal. So here's that interview with Claude Julien. Claude, thanks so much for joining us. I guess the first question we got to ask is, how are you? How is your health? How are you feeling? We obviously go back to August. There was a scare. The hockey community was scared. How you doing?
I'm doing well, actually, guys. Feeling really, really good once they put that stent in and blood circulation started going back to that heart. Everything fell into place. So I'm actually feeling really good and probably better than I have in a long time.
That's awesome to hear, Claude. You know, one of the first things I want to start off with you is, and we've asked a couple of people as we've been doing this, a couple of hockey lifers. All of us have done this for a long time, and none of us ever have November and December off normally. I'm curious what you found that you've kind of missed in your hockey journeys during these hockey months that you're able to take advantage of now in such a weird year.
Well, as you know, we're all creatures of habits, right? And we've been doing that for such a long time. And, you know, being off a little bit is one thing, but we've been off for a long time. And when you take away that the playoffs and the bubble, we've basically been off, a lot of us, since the month of March. So I think, for speaking from my own opinion, is the fact that I miss it. And I'm you know, dying to get back out there, and I want to get back into doing what I love doing. And, you know, hopefully that happens sooner than later, but, you know, you miss it. You're used to a certain pace in your life. And, I think right now it's been slow to nothing. And, really, it's been challenging at times. There's no doubt about it. You can take the positive, from it, and saying you're spending more family time and all that stuff, which is great. And I think we'll remember that for a long time as well. But, you know, I think a lot of people are hoping to get back to what we consider normal here sooner than later.
Yeah. And Claude, that's the key word, right? Hoping, as we continue to wait to find out word on when this might be. And as a coach, I was talking to another member of your coaching fraternity the other day, and how difficult it is right now to plan and prepare, because you normally have a plan going into training camp and a preparation and a model that you want to follow. How difficult is it now to be caught in this limbo?
Well, it is. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I just spoke with my coaches there just a few days ago and said, listen, we're going to maybe start chatting there on Zoom a little bit, just to slowly start catching up. You know, we're all optimistic and keeping our fingers crossed that you know, you hope that in the new year we're going to be back to work again. But, you know, the challenge that you're talking about is the fact that, you know, you can't really prepare with the unknown. You don't know when you're going to start trying to do things that is way too early to prepare for, and having to come back to it again in a month or so and having to redo it a second time around. I mean, you're wasting a lot of energy and probably wasting a lot of time. So you want to be fresh with your ideas and your preparation. So we're just, we're all sitting back there waiting for a little bit of sign of life that will get us going and give us a reason to really start preparing for a training camp, hopefully, like I said, in the near future.
Well, hopefully those signs start coming in the next couple of days. It seems like some stuff might start to shake out. I'm curious for you, maybe even a little more difficult because of the enthusiasm that's kind of gripped Montreal and the strides that you made last year in making the playoffs and, you know, having a pretty good run there and showing what kind of team Montreal could be. And then, you know, some of the additions that have been made. It's as exciting a time in Montreal as I can remember. Do you have that sense as well?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, people are really optimistic about the changes and the additions that were made to the hockey club. And I really feel like, you know, we've got a roster right now, when it's healthy, that should be really competitive. And, you know, we're confident about that. We've got some guys that have been there for a long time that have done a good job, but we've brought in some guys that are going to help support that group and make us a deeper hockey club. So, you know, you just have to start from the goaltending situation and having a really good goaltender that should be able to give Carey Price some rest. And hopefully we see the Carey Price we saw in the playoffs because of that, you know, on defense where we're much bigger now, a little bit deeper, and up front, same thing. I mean, when you had the the Foleys of this world and the Andersons, and we got a little bit bigger. We hope that we got a little bit more depth in the scoring department. So all that put together, guys, I think gives reason for fans to be a lot more optimistic, and we as well as an organization and the coaching staff.
You know, and you and Claude, you mentioned it, the goaltending, and I think the addition of Jake Allen might be, of all the guys you just mentioned, might be the most important because of the importance of that position. It's got to be so tantalizing to want to use Carey Price all the time because of how good he is. Does adding Allen take the pressure away from always having to turn to Carey, even in key situations, big games and things like that?
Absolutely. That's our hope, you know, and again, as much as we like Carey and, you know, we got caught in situations in the past years that, you know, you might have been planning to give him some days off or some games that he would just be a backup. And but yet you got caught in the, I guess, the schedule that those games and those wins were so important for you to have an opportunity to make the playoffs that we ended up overutilizing him. We you know, the games he played in the past few years were not the numbers that we were counting on. But, you know, we got in situations where we didn't have a choice. So having said that, with Jake, not only, you know, does Jake come in and give Carey some rest, but you can put Jake in some big games, and he's very capable of standing up to those situations and giving you some valuable points. So we're looking forward to that.
How much did the fact, and you didn't know exactly when you signed him, but there would obviously be a thought that the schedule was going to be so condensed. And now, clearly, as we approach January 1st, it is going to be condensed, and nobody knows exactly what it looks like, but there's going to be games on top of games to try and get everything done. How much did that factor into making that decision? Because among all the NHL teams, you guys are probably one of the teams that has the most money tied up in goaltending.
Yeah, we are, and but you know, we also realize that's how important it was at this stage to have that kind of money tied into that. Because of that reason, you know, we think again that Jake can really give us some big games here, especially like you mentioned with this condensed schedule that's coming out. I think more than anything else, and then a lot of coaches are going to tell you the same thing, that the two goaltending tandem is going to be key going through this kind of schedule. So we really feel that was an important decision to make. And again, probably even more so pleased that we're able to get a goaltender like Jake Allen come to our hockey club. And so we're like I said, we understand that we've tied up a lot of money in that position, but at the end of the day, we're also confident that it's going to pay off.
Claude, I wanted to switch gears, and another one of your additions, Josh Anderson, to me is one of the most intriguing players in the league because of that ability to be the true throwback type of power forward. How does he fit with the style that you guys want to play? Why is he essential? And I mean, this was a big move by Marc Bergevin to not only make that trade, but sign him to the big contract.
Yeah, well, you know, the one thing I think we have to be honest about is the fact that we needed to get a little bit bigger. You know, as much as we were fast and, you know, we were an exciting team, there were some games I thought that we struggled along the walls because of our size. So bringing him in there gives us that element of size and grit. He's a great forechecker. He's good along the walls. He's great in front of the net. You know, he's got a lot of qualities that we really needed in regards to that. And, you know, he's a good skater. I mean, when he's forechecking, he's coming at you pretty quick. So, you know, all those kind of things just made him a real good fit for a hockey club and help us get, like I said, a little bit bigger. And then in some of those games that we struggled, he'll give us that added size that we needed.
But it struck me in the last week, you know, Luke Richardson was on a Zoom call with some reporters and, you know, talked a lot about Alex Romanoff, the young defenseman that's joining you guys this year. People are almost giddy about this prospect and what he can bring to the Montreal Canadiens. You know, you've coached a lot of good defensemen throughout your career when you think back to all the stops that you've made. When you look at Alexander, what do you see that is so intriguing and has people so optimistic?
Well, you know, it starts off with his personality. You know, he's a really happy individual that has a lot of confidence. You can tell he loves the game. He comes to the rink, he wants to be there. One of those guys that you're going to have to drag off the ice, you know, at the end of a practice. He's got all those qualities, but also when you watch the games, and I mean, I haven't been able to watch him as closely as some others, but, you know, watch him in the World Juniors when he was on TV, seeing him in the bubble when he was in Toronto with us, and how he practiced, and he's big, he's strong, he's got size, he's got grit. He's a great guy, but the minute he steps on the ice, it's all business. I think he's got a lot of qualities that gives you the impression that he's going to be a really good defenseman at the top. You know, I feel there's no reason why this guy shouldn't be a top two, and, you know, at worst he'll be a top four, but I can't see this guy not succeeding with what I've seen. And he just excites you watching him, to even practicing with our guys. He surprised a lot of guys with his grit and his intensity in drills. And and then you see him off the ice or even on the ice at times, big smile, just loves being on the ice. So I think there's something there in his demeanor that gives people a lot of confidence in what this guy is going to be able to bring.
Well, there's a reason to be excited about him. I wonder if you know, we switch to the center position, right? And that's where I wanted to go with you. So often we've heard about the Canadians, oh, they don't have a number one center. The center depth is an issue. How do you feel about it now with Suzuki, with Deneau, with Kotkaniemi? How do you feel about your center depth as it's developing, especially from what you may have seen last season and in the bubble and you know, just, you know, the emergence of a guy like Suzuki especially?
Well, you know, I'd say a lot better because we were a little thin in that position. That's why when we drafted Kotkaniemi, we really felt we needed a centerman to help us fill that hole. And, you know, for a lot of us, when you want some top centermen most of the time, you basically have to draft them and develop them. So we got lucky with Nick Suzuki as far as being able to get him through a trade. But, you know, I think the depth there is much better. Are we going to have some situations during the season where, you know, we're going to have to live with some of the growing pains of some young centermen? I think so. You know, I don't think we're out of the woods yet in regards to that. But I think that the potential and the depth is there, and especially with the way both Kotkaniemi and Suzuki handle themselves in the playoffs, gave us real good reason to be optimistic. Phil Deneau's turned into a really good two-way centerman, you know, can produce, can play against top lines, defensively very sound. So it allows those two other guys to be able to expand their wings a little bit and then try and develop in the areas that they're really good at. And if you talk about Suzuki, I think Nick has an opportunity to also become that really good two-way centerman. He already has, that potential in him, and he's shown it that he's able to handle that at times as well. So we're pretty optimistic with regards to having, solidified that position much better.
What changed for Jesperi in the bubble? Like, he was so good for you guys the first year, you know, and his ceiling seemed limitless. And then like a lot of players, he struggled early in the second year, had to go down a little bit. And then, you know, came into the bubble and was a better player than maybe he was that first year when expectations were so high. What was the difference that you saw?
Well, there's a couple of things. There's a couple of reasons. I think, first of all, like, you know, as you mentioned, everybody develops differently. And sometimes, you know, a guy needs to set back or needs to go back down and come back up to be a better player. But at the same time, to his defense, I would say, you know, he had come off surgery during the summer before and had knee surgery. And when he came back, I don't think he was quite ready as far as being in top shape and being ready to bounce back. And that kind of gave him a slow start. And because of that, he struggled throughout the start of the season. And then he went down there and was trying to get his game going, then got injured again. So that set him back, and he was off for a while. So we were kind of happy and really glad to see that when he came back into the bubble, he looked more like the player he originally was when he first came in. So I think part of it is a maturity of a young 18-year-old is part of it, but also the fact that he had gotten over those injuries and seemed to be a lot closer to 100% than he was when he first came back.
Talk about maturity. I know we're peppering you with questions about players here, specific players here. I got one more for you. Jonathan Drouin, so much hype around him. When he came into the league, maybe some of that hype has now faded, but There's more there. I've heard you talk about that. What's the key to ignite Drouin and get him to maybe play to the level of that potential that he has?
Well, you know, as coaches, you always try and encourage your guys and try and make them become as consistent as possible. And we know in an 82-game schedule, it doesn't mean you're always going to be great. But what you want is, you know, the honest effort. You want to see the player trying, and some nights it goes better than others. And, you know, you can live with that stuff. With the Jonathan, that's what we're trying to get with him, is that consistency in his game. We know the top end, and we know the potential that this guy has. And when he's on his game, he's a really good player. And he showed that, you know, in the playoffs, he came in and, again, seemed to be excited about being in the playoffs, and had, you know, I thought he had a good start to last year, and he was on the right track. And then he got that major injury in Washington, and was out for at least three months, if not more. And when he came back, he wasn't the same player again, you know. So, you know, you hope that he's going to start the season on the right foot. You hope that he's going to build on that and then try and create some consistency in his game. And that's all I think that he needs to do. And some of it we can encourage, we can try and, you know, really push him to be that. At the same time, there's a big part of it that has to come from him and realizing it and then putting in the effort to be that. So, you know, we're he's still, you know, considered fairly young, 26-year-old player, and hopefully that comes around.
Well, I'm not going to ask you about any more players. I'm going to let you wax a little a little poetic, go a little bit more broad strokes. There's been so much talk and speculation about the possibility of an all-Canada division when we play this year, because it'll be condensed and travel concerns and the border and everything else. Even Gary Bettman spoke a little bit about it when he spoke earlier this week. As a longtime hockey guy who grew up, you know, in Canada with those teams, what would it mean to have an all-Canada division? And every time you play a game, it's going to be against one of those other teams in Canada, especially some of the real strong rivalries that are there. As a proud hockey guy, when you think about playing, you know, whether it's 48 games or whatever it is, all against Canadian teams, what does that mean?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm not going to lie, I think I'm going to miss playing teams in the States as well. There's good rivalries there as well. As you know, Montreal-Boston rivalry has always been there. So there's a part of it that you lose. But at the same time, as you mentioned, you know, growing up in Canada and being a Canadian, there's an excitement there, because it's something different. And, you know, it's short term. It could be just for the year if that happens. The thing that I'm looking at the most right now as a coach and living in the present is how competitive that would be, because most of the teams, I would say, with a very few exceptions, are all teams that feel they are competitive and feel they should be playoff teams. And so there's going to be a pretty good battle there, I think, moving forward, if that ever falls into place. And I think that's where we're all kind of sitting back saying, we better be ready for this short season if it does happen. And if we do end up in the Canadian division, because it'll be extremely competitive.
Do you have to study more? I mean, they're Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, Winnipeg. These aren't teams you see on a regular. So does it require a little bit more of a research from the coaching staff, more video from the video staff and all that?
Well, I would say, I don't know about the research more than, you know, being familiar at playing against them. You know, we see them, you know, twice a year, home and away. And so you don't play much. You don't get, you know, I guess, used to playing against the specific style of each team. So that might be a little bit different. But, you know, with today's pre-scout and everything else, there's not much that's unknown when it comes to other teams. And you know who their best players are, you know how the other coach handles his team and as far as utilizing his lines and ice time and everything else. So I think we've got that pretty well covered. It's just a matter of, you know, how does your team fare against that team that you don't play against much, and I think we'll find that out pretty quickly if that happens.
I think as a coach, you're probably really excited about seeing Connor McDavid 7 or 8 times and Elias Pettersson 7 or 8 times instead of just twice, right?
Well, our fans will. I'm not sure about me as a coach.
Yeah, you could toss in Leon Draisaitl. There's a number of them. Hey, Claude, thank you so much for hopping on with us. It's great to hear from you, and we can't wait to see you behind the bench. Glad that you're healthy, and stay safe, all right?
Well, thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on. Pleasure chatting with you.
Great stuff there from Claude, Sean. He had a lot to say, and there's a lot of excitement there in Montreal for good reason, too, I think. They are a team, maybe the most overhauled team in the league. There's a lot going on there, a lot of talents that's been brought in, depth that's been brought in. I think there's a significant reason for excitement in Montreal.
For sure there is. Just the experience that they got in the playoff bubble, you know, a lot. Again, remember back, like, some people were like, well, if they let in more teams and Montreal gets in, you know, they don't get a chance at a high draft pick, you know, they're only going to hurt themselves. I think they helped themselves. I think, you know, and Claude talked about it. Some of the young players that they have, right, were able to see what the playoffs are like, not the crowds hanging over the glass and screaming at them and, you know, trying to keep them up in their hotels and all those other things that go on when you, when you have the fans involved, but they got to see what playoff hockey is about, what, you know, that style and that intensity of every other night and every night it is about. And I think that will only help them as they go forward. You know, the two things that I found most interesting, one were his comments on Drouin and how, you know, he's going to have to light the fire under himself. And he's still a young player at 26. Well, that window
is closing. We've been waiting for Drouin to do that for years now.
Yeah, that window's closing. And you look at him some nights and you're like, it's there.
I think he is what he is. I think he's a good player who's never going to quite live up to his potential.
Yeah, and maybe his potential was mismanaged. And then the other thing, and the thing everybody's wanted to talk about and seems to be more and more reality is, you know, Canada announced that they're not going to open the border until the pandemic's under control. And that's not going to be by the time we open our season, by the way the numbers have gone lately. Is the possibility of an all-Canada division and you know, how excited that made Claude, you know, the joke that he would have to see McDavid and Pedersen and Draisaitl and all those guys six more times than he normally does. You know, he's spot on. The fans are going to love it. And the conversations are going to be unbelievable. And the biggest conversation piece right now is who's the best team in Canada if they play in all Canada division? Who wins? Who gets to put that banner up in their barn?
How many barroom debates across the country of Canada have there been about that? Right? I mean,
to avoid my question.
No,
who puts the banner up in the barn?
Who's the best team and all that stuff, right? I mean, who's the next Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup and all that? And now, look, I mean, we don't know if a Canadian team will win the Stanley Cup, but there's got to be a huge level of excitement. And this is like, it's like fantasy purposes for some Canadian fans. But look, you talk about, let's stay on the Canadians here, because a year ago, if you looked at the Canadian teams, you probably would rank them toward the bottom of that group. Now you have to put them at or near the top based on what they look like on paper. I think Toronto has to be considered there as well. Edmonton, I guess, but they still have to, you know, they still have a little bit to prove there. The goaltending issue, I'm still a little skeptical, but Montreal, goaltending is set. Defense looks good. Center depth is coming around, and Claude's right. They're going to have to deal with some growing pains there, but it's coming around. The wings look good. The forward depth looks strong. They may be the top Canadian team right now, the top, you know, team in Canada right now. They may be the favorite to win an all-Canada division.
Are you filibustering, or are you going to answer my question?
All right. You want me to give an answer? I'm going to say that the Toronto Maple Leafs will win the all-Canada division. Because I think in a shortened season, the Toronto Maple Leafs with their skill can get real hot, real fast, and get a lot of points in that, you know, early on to be able to coast a little bit if need be. So I will say the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I'm going to say Montreal would be number two.
Vancouver.
All right. Vancouver, they're good. I like Vancouver a lot. They showed a lot in the playoffs. There's no question about it. Do they have enough on the back end to do it? They're good, but I'm not sold fully. I'm sold on the Canucks being a contender, but I'm not sold on them being a team that's going to win it. And also, how's the travel going to work? You know, where are they going to play? There's a lot of that too. So Vancouver's used to travel, but I'm going with, if you have to rank them right now, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Calgary, Ottawa. That's where I'd go.
Wow. You got Winnipeg down that low, huh?
I got Winnipeg down that low. Yeah.
To me, they're the big enigma. What are they going to do, right? Yeah. Like, what's going to happen with Patrick Laine? You know, how Shifley going to be? Can Connor Hellebuck do what he did again? What's their defense going to do? You know, you talk about Vancouver having some questions on their blue line. Winnipeg is just one huge question mark on their blue line. But I love Paul Maurice as a coach, and you know, they certainly have the talent to do something special. If Connor replicates what he did, they in a short season they could do some damage.
Of course, and I think, I mean, he carried them so much last year. But again, it's a short season. How condensed are the games going to be? Can you rely on Connor Hellebuck to start three quarters of your games, if not more? Because if you can't, then that's a lot of points you may be putting on the table there that you might not be getting. I don't know. There's questions there, but you asked the question. I gave you the answer. The Toronto Maple Leafs are my answer.
It took you a long time.
It took me a little while to get there.
You were ducking it.
I ducked a little bit. I had to think about it while I was talking. Anyway, actually, I got a mailbag question regarding the Toronto Maple Leafs. Before we get to our next interview with Kendall Coyne Schofield, I had a mailbag question. I answered it on Wednesday. I'm going to pose it to you. In this unique season, unique offseason, unique regular season that it's going to be, who's better suited for a long playoff run, the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Boston Bruins?
Better suited.
Better suited for a long playoff run.
I think it's the Bruins.
That's what I answered too. Why do you think it's the Bruins?
Because A, they're going to have a lot more time to get healthy, right? They're basically their whole top line is on IR right now. they're going to have time to deal with Krug's defection. Tuukka Rask get back into playing shape after leaving the bubble and having not played in a really long time. They have that two goalie tandem, which is going to be huge. You know, Claude talked about it. They can bring Halak out and not skip a beat and keep Tuukka fresh for the playoffs. So, and they're the more experienced team. I don't believe that their window is completely closed. Look, if Chara doesn't come back and Krug's gone, there's certainly some questions there, but they're one of the most experienced teams in the league. They know how to win, and I'm not ready to write them off. And I don't think Toronto can beat them in the playoffs until Toronto proves they can beat the Bruins in the playoffs, which they don't have to do if there's an all-Canadian division and they end up staying in division. And I don't know what any of that would look like. But I'm just saying, like, Boston's been the better team forever. And I'm of the opinion that until you beat the champ or the better team in this case, you're still the challenger.
Yeah, I said the Bruins. Also, one specific reason I gave the Bruins the answer was less games – less taxing on the body, and they're some of their better players are 30 and above. And you're right about the health issue, but less travel. I mean, they just won't be taxed as much by all the travel. And I think that's going to play a big factor for some of these teams like Boston, like Pittsburgh, like Washington, teams we've seen as traditional winners of late, whom we wonder when the window is going to close. I wonder if a season like we could be getting now will keep that window open for at least another year. So it was an interesting question. I'm glad you gave a direct answer, unlike me with your question.
And the Bruins, let's not forget, they got knocked out early this year. They've played a lot of hockey.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In the last 3 years. So they've had some time off. They're going to come back healthy and fresh, and they're going to come back angry. I don't think any of them are happy about what happened last year. So they would still be the team there for me.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, well, let's get to our next interview. As we've teased it enough, it's Kendall Coyne Schofield. She is now the player development coach and youth hockey growth specialist for the Chicago Blackhawks, hired on November 23rd. She continues to break these glass ceilings. Also, by the way, still a player for the U.S. national team. So here's that interview with Kendall Coyne Schofield. Kendall, thanks so much for joining us. So this job with the Blackhawks, I guess let's start right there. How did it all come to pass? How did you get it? What was the process there?
Well, I think the process has been a process of evolution. Over the last 6-7 years, this role has become formalized with the Blackhawks. I started as a media relations intern in 2014 after the Sochi Olympic Games and before I returned to my junior year at Northeastern. One of the big reasons I went to Northeastern was because of the co-op program. And I had my aspirations set on co-oping with the Chicago Blackhawks. And I did that as a media relations intern. And then from there, I continued working as a community liaison, doing things when I could in between playing. And Chicago always found a place for me, you know, over the last 6-7 years in different aspects of the organization. So when things started to formalize over, you know, the last few months, I said I wanted to be a part of, you know, hockey operations, the hockey aspect of the organization and help develop and build players to be NHL ready. And so when the opportunity to be a player development coach came about, I was extremely excited and honored.
When I look back and I think about your career and how fast everything's come, and especially in the last couple of years, you know, from, you could say, 2018 on, like it's been almost nonstop, and the things that you've been able to accomplish, the All-Star game with the NHL certainly rose your profile, the Olympic games. Have you had time to kind of sit back and just think about all the things that have come your way hockey wise and reflect on what it's been like?
I don't think I've had much time to sit back yet. But that's okay. I want to keep going. I want to keep breaking barriers. I want to keep opening doors, and I want to keep showing, you know, young boys and girls that there's a place for them in this game if they have the dreams to, you know, be in the game. I think, you know, when things get crazy or stressed or, you know, things are moving pretty quickly, I think I take a step back when I'm really out on the ice in the community with the kids, and I live vicariously through them in those moments. And that's how the game started for me. And especially being here in Chicago, I put on my first pair of hockey skates 22 miles southwest of the United Center, and now that's my home building. And it's pretty special. So it has been a really exciting, overwhelming couple years, but you know, this is what I hope for a lot of other people when they start this journey in the game of hockey.
You know, and that brings me to a question I wanted to ask you, because we celebrate these moments, these breaking barrier moments, breaking the glass ceiling, if you want to call it. Do you think there'll come a time soon, hopefully sooner rather than later, if it does, that we don't have to celebrate them, that it's just going to be considered normal?
I couldn't agree with you more. We I hope sooner than later. You know, I think for me, being the first player development coach in the Blackhawks organization is an honor. You know, it comes with nerves, it comes with excitement, but I think what it comes with is excitement for who comes next. And that I hope who comes after me, and if it, as a woman in this position, doesn't feel as much pressure, doesn't feel, you know, the hype of being first, just feels she goes into that role, she's there to do her job just like anybody else. And I think we need more women in before that can happen. We need more women in, you know, the decisions that are coming about, like when it comes to talent, when it comes to rosters, when it comes to developing a player. We need a more diverse group looking at that side of the hockey world. But I think absolutely you hit it on the head. When there's more, it's not as celebrated, but it's as appreciated.
Do you feel that process has accelerated with some of the things that have happened? You know, your job in particular, other things that have happened in other sports, right? The Florida Marlins with the GM, you know, every week you watch college football or pro football, you see women referees. The woman in Cleveland with the Browns was the interim tight ends coach. Like, it seems almost every time you turn around now, there are these things that everybody's wanted to happen, happening at a more rapid pace. Living in it, do you feel like those opportunities are accelerating?
I do think they're accelerating, because I think the implicit biases of women being in a more male dominated field are being eliminated. People are getting to a table and they're reviewing her bio and they're reviewing what she can bring to the table and the assets she has to help a team win championships. And it's a no brainer. It's not, okay, first she's a woman and second she brings this. It's no, she brings this to the table. Let's hire her. And we need to continue to have those conversations. We need to continue to diversify the seats at the table so that, you know, when new candidates are available, it's a no-brainer who should be hired. It's not based on the gender of the person that is anticipating the hiring.
And you said there's some pressure associated with the job, obviously. So just describe, because it's really twofold, right? Your job's twofold. It's player development coach plus youth hockey growth specialist. So I was wondering if you could describe what you will now be doing for the Hawks and how you'll be doing it.
Yeah. So with those two roles, I've said it before, but I think what excites me the most is the development aspect of each role. As a youth hockey growth specialist, I'm going to continue doing what I've done over the last 7 years here in Chicago. And that's build programs. That's build initiatives. That's get girls and boys into the game of hockey. Last year, the Blackhawks and I started the Golden Coins program, which is an all girls program for girls age 6 to 12, as you know, to kind of take a step further in their skill development in the game. And it's not as full fledged of a commitment as being on a team. It's affordable. It's accessible. We had an all female coaching staff, and this was the first time a lot of girls stepped on the ice with other girls. So that was, you know, we'll continue to build on those programs, get out to the Chicago public schools with goal programs. Again, if that's allowed to, when the pandemic, you know, when we're able to safely enter the schools. And then as a player development coach, it's working with our prospects. It's watching their games. It's writing reports on their games. It's breaking down film as to, you know, what they're doing and what we want to see them do. It's touching, you know, it's having touch points with them. And then ultimately when able to, getting on the ice in Rockford, you know, I'm somewhat far, but not far. I'm still here in Chicago. So I'll head up to Rockford and get on the ice with those players as well. So I think the pressure and the part that I'm looking forward to the most is getting to know the players and earning their trust through the process of getting to know them. And, you know, I think it's the first time a lot of them will have a woman who is a coach. And then secondly, I think it's the first time a lot of them will have a coach who's also still playing. So it's kind of those two pieces of my role that it's going to be new for them. And I look forward to earning their trust through the process.
Well, and I was going to bring that up, Kendall. I was getting exhausted just listening to everything you're going to do in those two roles. And we didn't even mention the fact that you're still an active player and your goal is to, you know, make the 2022 Olympic team and compete for the United States again. Where are you going to find all the time?
Well, I have said this before, but I think if there's a group of people in the hockey community that have multitasked more than anybody, it's women's hockey players. And the reason being is an unfortunate one. And it's because when we graduate college, we know we can't make a living playing this game. So our mindset shifts to, okay, how can I? And for me, I never wanted to leave this game. I wanted to stay in this game from the day I started at 3 years old. So from the time I went through my recruiting process at 17, you know, my focus was, okay, how can I stay in the game? How can I make a living playing this game? And what do I want to do other than playing the game? And for me, you know, that has come through broadcasting, that has come through a player development coach, that has come through a community liaison, that, you know, so I've really been fortunate to be able to see all the different aspects that goes into a professional sport organization. And I'm thankful the Blackhawks are willing to juggle my schedule with me, allow me to continue to play, then also allow me to get this experience as a player development coach and continue my passion as a youth hockey growth specialist.
I'm curious, how did what you did last season with the Sharks, the broadcasting aspect, being with the team, seeing that team through, how does that help you in your overall just hockey acumen? You know, seeing the game from that aspect, working with those people.
Oh, I think it really inspired me to want to be a player development coach, because there were so many times before the game when you're watching pregame skate and you're taking notes, and when you really are focused on one team, like I was the Sharks, I feel like I knew what those guys were eating for breakfast, right? Because I was watching them every single day and all the finer details that went into their preparation and their games. But watching the pregame skates or watching the practices the day after, I remember thinking to myself, like, I want to be out there. Like, I know I can be out there. Mm-hmm. You know, not only did I want to get out there as a player, but I'm like, I know there's areas in which I can help or, you know, just be a part of. So I think from a broadcasting standpoint, that actually gave me the itch to want to get on the ice. But then also too, seeing it from a different lens as a broadcaster, I'm so grateful for the opportunity the Sharks gave me. You know, Doug Wilson called me before the Blackhawks announcement to congratulate me. And, you know, they're a first-class organization made up of first-class people, and I'm going to miss them dearly. And, you know, I, like I said, in my announcement, I said, a part of my heart will always be teal.
When you think about working with prospects and being in player development, there might not be a more exciting time to do it with the Chicago Blackhawks than right now. You may not have dug very deeply in yet. You're brand new at the job, but when you just look at some of their top end prospects and kind of that next generation that's coming, it's the wave after the Kane and Taze wave, you know, where you have Kirby Dach and Boqvist and all those players. When you look at some of the young talent that Chicago's assembled, it has to be like, I'm sure you want to start tomorrow.
Start tomorrow. I started 2 weeks ago. yeah, it's extremely exciting. Are you kidding? This is it. When you think of player development in an organization, you want to be involved in player development. It's the Chicago Blackhawks right now. There's such an emphasis on developing this future talent so that when they get to the NHL, they're ready to go. They're ready to help win championships and a Stanley Cup for the Chicago Blackhawks. So you absolutely hit it on the head. And I think, you know, I'm excited. There's not as much hockey going on, so it really has helped me kind of get my feet wet the last 2 weeks. But there are still some of our prospects playing. So it's already been a great 2 weeks, but I look forward to it. And there are definitely some dynamic prospects that I look forward to watching and getting to know, and look forward to seeing them put a Blackhawks jersey on one day.
You know, we recently, not too long ago, had your now former teammate, Megan Duggan, on the podcast. And she said she would love to be a general manager in the National Hockey League. I'm curious. I mean, you're still a player. You're in player development. We're not graduating you too far just yet, but what's in your mind? What's your goals? Like, what do you want to accomplish in this game? I guess, what's the end goal, I guess?
I don't think there's ever an end goal. I think your goals, your dreams, they change over time. It's a step-by-step process. You know, when I was 3 years old, I wanted to play on the Blackhawks. And then I met Cammy and I wanted to play on Team USA. And then, you know, I started going through the recruiting process. I wanted to do broadcasting. Like, they evolve over time. And I think this is the perfect opportunity for me to see where I can go from here. Maybe I stay in player development. And this is the answer, but I don't think I have the answer, whether it's becoming a GM, whether it's becoming a coach. I don't know yet. I think that's what's so exciting about this. And I'm excited to be able to learn from so many incredible people within the Blackhawks who have been doing this for 30 plus years. And I just need to be a sponge and soak everything up that I can learn in this next year. And hopefully take that with me. And you know, what's next? I think it still remains to be seen, but it's exciting.
You mentioned being a coach, and I'm curious, have you thought at all about in your head what the timeline is before we see a female coach in professional hockey in the NHL?
Well, if I was to give you a timeline, I'd say tomorrow. I would have said yesterday. I would have said 20 years ago. You know, ASAP, in caps, bold, italicized. But, you know, when, you know, I think it, as soon as possible, you know, there's a lot of incredible coaches out there. And I think, you know, we saw Haley Wickenheiser, you know, I think, I know she's becoming a doctor and has a lot of other things going on. You know, she's close. I think we're very, 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 very close.
And I wanted to ask you this too, because I can't imagine how this felt. The welcome wagon was out for you when you got hired by the Blackhawks. I mean, you had players on the team, Kane, whoever it may be, you know, welcoming you to the organization. So many wonderful, you know, exemplary welcomes. Oh, you deserve it. You're there. What was that like? What did that feel like for you to know that this was as accepted as it was?
Overwhelming. It was extremely humbling, overwhelming. I couldn't believe it, to be honest. I get a little emotional thinking about it, because if I can continue doing what I love and I have a passion for, and it inspires people the way that I saw it inspire people when the announcement came out, I hope it means I'm doing something right. I hope it means that I'm leaving this game better than when I entered it. I hope there's a lot of young girls and boys seeing that announcement and saying, I can do that too. There's young boys and girls seeing and valuing each other equally in this game, now that they're seeing NHL players valuing me just as they do their other coaches. And they're seeing, you know, the landscape of the game of hockey changing and evolving right in front of their eyes. And it's creating a new perspective and limelight on, you know, what is necessary, what is needed, and what is possible within this game. But just hearing from so many teammates, friends, you know, players around the league, coaches, general managers, other scouts. I mean, it's been overwhelming. I'm very grateful. I'm very thankful. And it just shows, I hope that there's so many young kids out there that it's inspiring to really follow their dreams and do it with a passion, because that's what has gotten me to where I am today.
Kendall, you don't have to hope. It is an inspiration, and you've left the game better than when you arrived. And by the time you leave, it'll be even better. I mean, what you bring to the rink and the game and your passion shines through in everything you do. So, you know, don't hope, it's happened. And thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. It was awesome catching up with you. And I'm sure we're going to do it again soon, because you're going to be making some sort of new announcement that we'll have to follow up on. So keep doing what you're doing.
Well, thanks, Dan. Thanks, Sean. I really appreciate you guys having me. Have a happy and safe holiday season.
Good stuff there from Kendall. Obviously, you can get a sense of her emotion and what this means to her and the excitement that she has, Sean. So wish her nothing but the best with it. She's going to continue to do great things, no question about it. We got to mention the World Junior camps are going on right now. The World Juniors later this month, December 26th, it starts. NHL Network should be carrying all the games. And, you know, this is amidst a pandemic as well. They're going to be in a bubble in Edmonton doing it. And lots of questions about Canada in particular, the U.S. in particular. Canada's on quarantine right now. But there is some questions of, you know, Lafreniere. Is he going to be able to go, Sean? Will the Rangers let him? Even Jack Hughes, you know, should he go? Should the Devils let him go play for Team USA? What's your take now on the World Juniors as it approaches?
Yeah. In regards to that, I don't think you're going to see either one of those players at the World Juniors. Neither team is really interested in letting them go. They were not on the original rosters. The deadline is approaching. I think it's this weekend for them to be added, but I'm not sure that that's going to happen. I think it might be good for Jack Hughes, but I don't know if the Devils want to do that. I think the fact that the NHL season start is still in limbo and that he might be missing for training camp because the World Juniors doesn't end until January 5th. Probably weighs into that decision a little bit, but it is going to be interesting. Look, they're trying to do it like the NHL did it. They're doing it in Edmonton in a bubble in a secure zone as well. The teams have to come in and they'll quarantine there. They're quarantining now in their own countries and they'll quarantine in Edmonton. And then, you know, they're going to try and get together and play that tournament. But, you know, Canada's in a 2-week quarantine now because they had positives within their modified bubble. You know, a couple of BU players were just tested positive and have had their season postponed at least temporarily. So there's going to be some challenges, but look, it's a great window, right? It starts on December 25th and goes to January 5th. If we don't have hockey at that point and we're going to go a little bit later, you know, usually you try and juggle World Juniors and the NHL, and it proves really difficult. If you don't have to juggle it's great theater, and there's so many good players that are going to play in this tournament. Kirby Dach, who we mentioned before, Rossi from Minnesota just committed to playing, you know, countless other players, Askarov, the goalie from Russia, you know, and we're going to talk about this in more depth as it gets a little bit closer, but I'm already getting excited. I love this tournament every year and try and follow it as much as I can. And this year will be no different because I'm really jonesing for some hockey. So it'll be must watch TV.
You tried and juggle it a lot. I never try to juggle it, as you well know. I don't watch a lot of World Junior stuff, but I try to a little bit lately, but I don't watch a lot of it. This year, I might watch all of it because, like you said, need some hockey, right? So
yeah, and it's a great tournament, you know. I mean, and the theater is unbelievable, and all the games are going to be on USA Network. I'm on NHL Network in the USA.
Yeah, I got
that backwards a little bit. Just so many great moments in that tournament. So I can't wait. I hope everything works out and they're able to get this tournament in. And it's such a highlight for those kids at that age to play. And, you know, the biggest thing about it is going to be scouts haven't been able to scout.
Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of scouting going on.
Even if you're playing in a league, you know, the Europeans are playing against players that are much older than them. Even in the North American leagues where you're playing 16 to 20, if you're playing, you know, it's hard to judge a 17-year-old kid against a 19, 20, 25-year-old kid. This is peer versus peer. And this is going to be, with the limited scouting that happens, this tournament, if it happens, is going to be huge for formulating draft rankings and where players stand against each other. So it's going to be great.
No, we'll definitely be watching it. We'll be talking about it more as it approaches, no question about it. Before we sign off, and I let the dog back inside, by the way, one last thing. Our good buddy Kevin Weeks put out another good question. He's been kind of like our question of the week guy now. On Twitter, at Kevin Weeks, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. You can have any shutdown or stay-at-home defenseman on your penalty kill from the last 10 years, who do you have? Sean, who do you have? Who's your shutdown defenseman on the penalty kill from the last 10 years that you need to have in the Stanley Cup final?
Wow. Kevin Weeks,
good
brings,
question.
Brings the heat. The first guy that jumps into my head is Mark Edward Vlasic from San Jose, right? Like, not as good the last year or two, but we're talking the last 10 years. Like, at his prime, he was one of those guys that you, every time you put him on the ice, in whatever situation it was, there was no fear that he was going to make a mistake, right? Like, it just – he was going to get whatever needed to be done, done. So that's the first guy that pops into my head without a ton of thinking about it.
All right, I'll give you my answer. Zdeno Chara. Then to me, it's his reach alone makes the biggest difference on the penalty kill. And I actually took the time to look this up when I saw Kevin's question. The Bruins in the last 10 years are 83.7% on the penalty kill in 121 playoff games since 2011. Chara has played in over 400 shorthanded minutes, and he's averaging 322 per game. So he is a huge factor on one of the best penalty kills in the last 10 years in the playoffs. It's Zdeno Chara. I did give serious consideration to Mark Edward Vlasic, Dan Girardi, Nicholas Hjalmarsson, but it still came back to Chara for me.
Yeah, and Chara is a great choice. He's always a great choice, right? Like, no matter what you think about it, you know, and the more I think about it now, like Vlasic, he didn't play a ton of penalty minutes. He was at like 2.5, 3 for San Jose, a really good San Jose team. No, but, you know, I still think, you know, in key minutes, I'd put him there. Like, there's guys that have certainly had more minutes than him. But another guy that you mentioned that I think is really good there is Hammer, right? Hjalmarsson. Yeah. He's one of the most underrated defensemen, and he doesn't have a ton of, you know, name recognition, but he was such a big part of those Chicago teams and really did all the dirty work for him. So that was a good answer as well.
Yeah. Great question there by Kevin. Kevin, so if you're listening, ask another one. We will continue to follow up with it on this show because you're asking good questions. And Sean, it was great to catch up with Claude Julien. Great to catch up with Kendall Coyne Schofield. And of course, great to catch up with you.
Yeah, it was fantastic. After listening to Kendall and Claude, for that matter, I'm ready to go run through a wall to get this season started. So let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen. Until it does, we will be back. And until then, everybody stay safe out there.